Welcome to Bruderhof Radio. We're broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. This week, part one in a two-part series on burning issues in American education.
To me, it's perfectly obvious that what we're doing is fostering a kind of pathological dependency, that we're not making students self-confident to sort of build the internal resources that they need as learners, as active inquirers, as shapers of the world that they are going to live in.
Stanley Kubrick's landmark film, 2001: A Space Odyssey, first hit theaters in 1968. At the time, most Americans were as yet unfamiliar with the concept of computers, and the year 2001, now just around the corner, must have seemed light years away. Nevertheless, the film created an immediate sensation and led many to question man's relationship to technology, in particular the creation of artificial intelligence using computers. Kubrick's creation, the supercomputer named HAL that competed with humans for control of his spacecraft, was to be reincarnated many times in the world of science fiction. America, it seemed, had contracted a healthy case of technophobia. Not so today. In the last decade, the high-tech industry has flooded our lives with faster, more affordable, and more attractive electronic and computerized devices. We buy them, we sell them, we install them in our homes, our cars, and yes, even our schools. This week, in the first part of Bruderhof Radio's two-part series on education, a look at America's infatuation with all things high-tech and how this affects the education of our children. We spoke first with Langdon Winner, professor of political science at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, and author of several articles about society and technology. I'd like to start by asking you a question that you posed to the readers of, I think it was Newsday, and you asked the readers exactly how and when are computers distinctly useful as compared to other tools of learning, and what's your answer to that?
Well, my answer really is that in this day and age, we tend to go to the computer first and for just about every purpose. The point of the question is to return us to the basic questions about ends and purposes. And once one's become clear about that, then you can think about which instruments are truly useful. One thing that I find disturbing about the current push for computers in education and distance learning, for example, is that this enterprise has very little sense of what the ends of education are, what the purposes of teaching and learning are all about. There are no new philosophies of education which have arisen in this new enterprise. Secondly, there's no consistent or coherent address to the question of what educational strategies make sense. And there's a tendency to set aside what everybody has known for a very long time, namely that in education, the best single element are the encounters that students have with knowledgeable and inspired teachers. People able to open worlds of knowledge in art and science and music and literature, social studies, engineering, whatever the field. And instead, there is these days to sort of put the cart before the horse, the instrument before the purpose, and to say, oh, computers, network computers are a kind of big magic, so we'll just start there.
Are you skeptical merely about the misuse or overuse of technology in schools, or are you skeptical in some ways about the technology itself? In other words, are you sort of a neo-Luddite, or you just have concerns about how this technology is being applied?
Well, I'm very much interested in people who use information machines creatively in their work. I know a lot of artists and composers and scientists, engineers, and social scientists. They tend to be older and well along in their work, and they have learned somewhere the fundamentals, the basic orientation toward the world and toward the world of the knowledge that they're working within. What bothers me is the idea that educational technologies, including the computer, are a substitute for these fundamentals. There's a good deal of research that really goes back to the 1920s, which has produced a principle about educational technology. The principle is that of no significant difference. So decade after decade, where people have looked at the use of movies, of tape recorders, of television, of personal computers, network computers, all kinds of educational technologies which have been introduced since the time of Thomas Edison and his movie machine. The research has been pretty consistent, which is that it doesn't matter which technologies you use to convey information. There's no significant difference in how much students learn. Now, for the educational proponents, I suppose, this is good news, and maybe for the rest of it, it's pretty good news, because it suggests that whether using video cassettes or movies or personal computers or network computers, perhaps you're not doing too much harm, because it may, in study after study, it's shown that people who use no technology or those who use package of technology A or package of technology B, the learning for some students is better in some cases and worse in others, but by and large, measurements show that it doesn't much matter what kind of technology is used.
Now, you mentioned a number of studies that show that technology doesn't really improve the quality of education or give people a better education. Have there been any studies shown, or do you know of any examples where the use of technology has really hurt or hindered an education? I don't mean just in the fact that the money is being diverted from arts or music, as you mentioned before, but where the actual use of technology maybe stifles creativity or makes students less able to think creatively.
Well, I don't. I can't put my hand on studies at this moment. Among educators that I know who work closely with children, however, there are a great many who would say that given what the computer does, these very powerful, expensive machines, if you ask, let's say, grade school students, or even junior high students, middle school students, to look at their learning in reading, writing, mathematics, scientific inquiry, and other basic subjects as something that depends upon the use of high-powered information machines, what you're actually doing is insulting the ability of the students. What it says, in effect, is, well, you're not capable of having these resources internally. What you're going to need are these external resources, these powerful information machines. And I think what this does, and regardless of what any studies show, to me it's perfectly obvious that what we're doing is fostering a kind of pathological dependency, that we're not making students self-confident to sort of build the internal resources that they need as learners, as active inquirers, as shapers of the world that they are going to live in. Instead, we're creating highly dependent functionaries in a global economy. And I don't know why that idea is so appealing to people.
Now, some will argue that you need a certain level of computer literacy just to survive in the so-called information age. How do you balance these two? How do you provide this technical proficiency without stifling creativity?
Well, I think what one has to do is just draw reasonable boundaries. If one is, let's say, studying biology, one ought to have access to biological specimens and to teachers who care about biology, and not immediately rush to, a CD-ROM that has, lessons and pictures and so forth of of living things. I think that in our time, information machines have become a part of social life, a part of the workplace. What's problematic is the substitution for these machines for other domains of experience, other domains of knowledge and practice. So I'm not opposed to the use of information machines. What I oppose is the woeful insertion of them prematurely into education and to various kinds of contemporary practice.
Are we ever going to get to the point where the computer can just be another tool, maybe like a calculator or a pen and paper, where you know people aren't so infatuated by this new digital thing?
Well, that's a good question. I think that, in many ways that's the question of our civilization right now. Will we overcome the fixation, the obsession with technique, with instrumentality, of which the computer is simply the most exquisite manifestation? I think what's happened in Western civilization is that the attention to, you know, how we make this instrument work better, how do we improve this process, how do we improve this method, has become, you know, the kind of central fixation, such that we never go back to ask, you know, what are we about? You know, what should we be doing here? You know, we're always just tinkering with the machinery. And that blinds us to more fundamental questions about human relationships, about the natural realm, about questions of government, law, freedom, justice. We're always just tinkering with the mechanism and always looking for new ideas and vitality and energy to come from that. Then I think you have a whole civilization which is fundamentally adrift. And I hope that someday there'll be a widespread awakening to the fact that we become you know, hideously overcommitted to instrumentality, right to the basic core of our way of life.
You're listening to part one of Bruderhof Radio's two-part series on education. If you have comments or suggestions about this program, give us a call at 800-778-8461. Todd Allen Price recently completed his doctorate at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where he studied the role of computers and technology in education. His thoughts closely parallel those of Professor Winner.
Well, initially, the issue of public education, first of all, is to serve a greater good, which is hard to value in the marketplace. It's really for citizenship building and for preparing a younger generation of individuals to take on a greater role in a democratic society. So that would be where I would start. And then the place where computers and instructional technology enters that picture is where that enhances the initial mission of the public education institution, or if there are other avenues in which the educational technology and the computer are intended to serve. Now, the computers are merely a tool, and as such, they are basically, as any other tool, any other educational technology tool, for example, radio, television, overheads, microfiche, things of that sort, they are just there to enhance the instruction and to supplement the curriculum in meaningful ways if they're to accomplish anything at all.
Unless you're a Luddite, it's hard to argue that technology has no place in the classroom. But when computers become the focus of an educational philosophy, rather than a supplement to it, Price says the student suffers from a narrowing of perspective.
Now, in the public schools, what does this mean? Does it mean that Johnny or Jane are being given a curriculum that discourages creativity and innovation? Again, in the short term, I would say largely yes. I would say that what we are seeing is that there is just not much time afforded for one of the critical, very, very critical components of a democratic education, and what I would say is a critical education, and that is deliberation. There is what I see at the same time a narrowing of the curriculum. There is also a speeding up of the time in which people are given, and I mean people by not only young students but adult students in college and continuing students. There's an increasingly short amount of time given to deliberate, to basically consider and to weigh and to examine the different types of knowledges that are out there. So the liberal arts is something I've laid out some fairly lofty ideas, but putting it in perspective, the liberal arts in a given public school or in a public university, a state land-grant university like a University of Wisconsin, for example, has historically played a tremendously important role. Perhaps I would say a primary role, because liberal arts education is that which makes the individual more caring, more concerned about social justice, more involved in the issues of the day in a meaningful way, and not in a way which accepts the given order. But a liberal arts education is one which equips the individual with thoughts, ideas, but also a sense of purpose and a certain progressivity where you don't accept the social order. You don't accept the conditions as such. You are always critical in the sense that you are looking at how the world could be a better place. And you're rarely accepting the world as it is, as a fait accompli or a finished product. That is vastly out of line with the thinking in the schools today, and that's why I would say the liberal arts hold so little sway over the current climate of the public schools.
But as more and more schools buy into what Price calls the technological myth, only a very few are daring to ask just how all this technology affects the students themselves. Heinrich Arnold is a middle school teacher in upstate New York. His school has drastically reduced the role of computers in their curriculum.
Well, in the Woodcrest School, where I've been teaching for the past 8 years, up to 2 years ago, we'd pretty much kept up with the times as far as advancing our technologies and buying computers and software. And we bought a lot of the educational software. Of course, there's grant money available to schools to purchase software. So we used it in science. We used it in teaching keyboarding and history and math and reading. And we also used it a lot for... We thought it was creative at that time to generate papers and titles and pictures, and we also did quite a bit of research on it. Like when kids would do research on different subjects instead of going to the library, it was quite easy to look on one of the search engines for the material you were looking for. We started to realize that what we were teaching our children, our students, by relying so heavily on computers was kind of an easy way out, a lazy attitude. It was very difficult for students to learn how to use indexes, to learn how to use the library. And also we were seeing a decrease in creativity in drawing and writing. And so that is the underlying reason why we decided to scale back so drastically.
Critics say Arnold and his colleagues may be doing their students a disservice by isolating them from technology they will need to use later in life. But Arnold disagrees.
I grew up, going to school 20 years ago, computers weren't a mainstay in the classroom, and a lot of people my age who are now computer geniuses didn't have that computer education in grade school or even high school. They got that later in college or on the job, and they're doing just fine. And I think it's much more important to develop active thinking skills and creative skills, and computer skills can be learned later on as they are needed. If we start out with a computer skill, it seemed that there was a deadening effect on students' minds and their creativity and their ability just to do common sense, down-to-earth work. That seemed to be slipping, and I think that's a general trend in the country. we need to get back to basics. And it really is a more of an active lifestyle, a more active education system, whereas I think if you have more and more technologies, it's more passive. It's more sit back, look, listen. And I think it generates a very passive attitude in people and inability to have initiative, to have creativity. I wouldn't say that as a blanket statement, but I definitely see those trends in our society as well. And I think a lot of that has to do with technology and the fast pace of media. And I think it also is a reflection of the whole media of our country. Everything has become more glitzy, glamorous, fast-paced, little sound bites and video clips.
Arnold says that rather than suffering from this drastic change, his students supported the reduction in classroom computing.
I was surprised how positively the students took to this. Of course, we made an attempt to make it positive. You know, we said we'd have more time to have fun, to get outdoors. We'd be more creative about what we were doing. And we sort of laid it out like a challenge. And our students have really rose to that occasion. We see that most in a journal that we started up this year that we came up with this title, Log Offline. And that is a totally handwritten journal about school events and community events. And it's been an exciting project. And that's where we see a lot of the creativity that's coming from this decision. The students have to write by hand their articles, their interviews. And then we have to make the suggestions. They have to recopy it through several stages and finally make a nice copy, neatly handwritten in the right format. You can't just click and drag and cut and chop and paste, so it's a little bit more work.
To get a better idea of the journal with the tongue-in-cheek name, we spoke to three of the students involved with Log Offline. Jared Domer, Dory Rhodes, and Trevor Weiser are 7th and 8th grade students in Arnold's class.
It's all written out by hand, which, again, makes it a lot more work. It's also a lot more creative. I mean, anyone can get on a computer and paste and cut and stuff, and it's not original artwork. They didn't do it themselves. And it's also more pleasing to the eye. We thought that people would enjoy it more if it was handwritten, and then they could acknowledge all the work that was put into it.
Before we started the magazine, we had gotten rid of computers, so we knew it would be different. We knew we'd have to write it out by hand, and that it would look different. And we also were trying to think about a lot of new columns that would be interesting, not just like little recipes.
When we started the magazine, we cut a lot back on our normal classes to fit in each issue, and it covers a lot of them, like writing and how to write reports, and so I think that was a pretty good idea.
The magazine also gives us more opportunities to learn about real history, more than just what the textbooks would tell us. I did an article about Columbus, and doing research for it, I was very shocked at comparing what the textbooks would tell me, and what I found in books from Howard Zinn and from diaries of people who went with Columbus.
I guess that all you 7th and 8th graders my age can, sure, you can spend a lot of time on the internet, but if you make a magazine like this, it's something that's really going to stay with you, because you'll forget the stuff that you learn on the internet pretty easily. And a lot of this stuff is other people's opinions and what they're telling you.
It is ironic that in the age of the so-called information superhighway, technology can actually become a conduit for the wrong information. But what students often don't realize, according to Todd Price, is how they are being used by the global corporate structure that controls their access to this technology. And this, at least for Price, is perhaps more troubling even than the loss of individuality and creativity.
Ultimately, what's driving all of the corporations is a bottom line, which is to make the next quarter. And what it amounts to is a situation where we are looking at the globalization of the world in terms of economic markets being opened up that were otherwise fairly regulated. This whole structure is being broken down by the globalization. And the telecommunications corporations in particular, like an Ameritech, are part and parcel of this globalization effort. what do these corporations want to do in the schools then is they want to have freer access to the schools. They're interested in developing a really a class of students that will enter the workforce as many corporations have called it, ready to learn. Now what they mean by that is that the corporations really want their cake and they want to eat it too. They would like for the students to be largely trained as opposed to educated. They would like a lot of the students trained in order to be up to speed on the latest applications that the corporation is using, such that a given telecommunications corporation or most every industry that is moving into the computers right now will not have to spend money to train those individuals. And thus, the public education institution is seen as a breeding ground for future employees. It's a breeding ground for students that are expected to come ready to learn as soon as they hit the sticks and come out of high school. And thus, the best way to ensure and to determine that those students are going to be ready to enter those jobs is by ensuring that the curriculum reflects that world that the telecommunications companies and the corporations are largely determining. That means a globalized new world order where the students are really not encouraged to be free thinkers or philosophers. That's really the last thing that the corporations want.
That's all for this edition of Bruderhof Radio, a look at the role of computer technology in education. Next week, in part two of our series on education, we'll examine the money trail, who pays for our education, and why some districts have funding to spare while others are forced to operate on never-ending austerity budgets. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman and Ben Wright. For more information about Bruderhof Radio or to order tapes and transcripts, give us a call, toll-free, at 800-778-8461. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For more information, call us at 800-778-8461.